get to one meeting in January of 2009, a proposal was being made to completely alter the conditions that had been established in those resident meetings. When I tried to object and to get more information, the same three councilmen seemed to just try to push this through and take a vote on it right away and not allow any time for discussion or review. That was just, for me, the final straw, because I had promised the residents of the area who are in my council district that I would have their backs and protect their interests, their property values, the quality of life that they enjoyed on the street that they lived on. And I would ensure that those things would be protected even with the development. And the agreements that we had reached with the developers and the town officials and the neighbors prior to this council meeting would have put us on the path to do that. The change that was being proposed with, like I say, very limited, almost no discussion, just kind of pushed me over the edge.
To help the FBI, you agreed to wear a wire and collect evidence against your fellow councilmen. It sounds like something out of a movie, but you lived it. Describe what that was like for you.
I mean, there were some very scary moments. It was a major intrusion in my life. It's so much more than just recording a phone conversation, for example. I had to, every time I received a phone call from any one of the three councilmen, I had to let it go into voicemail, hear what the message was, call the FBI agent, ask for permission to activate the recording device, and then return the phone call. Sometimes they would pick up and we'd have a conversation. Sometimes it would go into their voicemail, and I would have to call the FBI agent, tell them that the call was unsuccessful, deactivate the device, wait for a return call, start the process over. And before I activated the recording device, I had to recite this preamble that included my name and who I was calling and what the purpose of the call was or who I was receiving a call from and why. And then when I concluded the call, I had to do a postamble that included pretty much the same information, date, time, who I was, and what I had just done. Sometimes it was a phone call just to say, hey, did you see the basketball game last night? But I had to go through this whole series of events that sometimes dragged that one phone call and that 10-second conversation into a half hour or an hour-long experience. And this happened several times a day, several days a week, for 17 months. So it was an extraordinary intrusion in my life. But there were also some later moments, too. You know, I can't say the entire thing was that harrowing.
The National Association of Secretaries of State says that what you did was an act of political bravery. Paul Crancy, is that how you see it?
No. At the time, I just saw it as something I needed to do to uphold the oath of office I took and to abide by the fiduciary responsibility I believed I owed to the citizens I represented. We take an oath every year that's longer than the presidential oath of office. We agree to uphold the laws of the U.S. and state constitutions, the laws of Rhode Island, the ordinances of the town. So many of those things were being broken. My wife and I discussed it at this January meeting where that Lowe's project was on the table. And when I got home, I was so upset, and I was ranting to her and we talked about it might be just time to go to the FBI and put an end to all of this because it doesn't seem that it's going to change otherwise. And we talked about the implications of that, how it would impact our lives going forward, that we would lose friendships, that there was a possibility I could lose my job, that it would be very difficult to find a job afterwards, that we might experience all kinds of backlash from friends that we've had for 30 and 40 years, and we may even have to move out of state when it's all said and done. But at the end of it, we came to the conclusion that if we didn't try to put a stop to the corruption, simply to preserve the lifestyle that we had built for ourselves, then we would really be acting no differently than those who were using corruption to enhance their own quality of life. When you bring it right down to that level, we really had no choice. We knew what we had to do, and now it was just a matter of doing it.
With the evidence you helped to collect, three former councilmen and a town solicitor were all sentenced to multi-year prison sentences, but a major developer implicated in the corruption was acquitted. That developer, Richard Beccari Sr., argued that he was merely another victim of a corrupt system. What's your view of that argument?
Well, it's interesting. It's hard. He claimed that, yes, he did pay the money, But he had to because it was just the cost of doing business. And had he not paid the money, he would have lost $1 million investment in the project because the zoning wouldn't have been approved. He argued that, in essence, what he did was pay an extortion, not a bribe. Now, you know, going through the trial, as long as it was, I was on the witness stand for 2 days. It's hard to argue that you're extorted if you pay the money after the vote has been taken. Because once the vote is taken and you have your zone change, you could say, hey, I'm not paying you. I mean, what are they going to do? Go to the police and say, hey, this guy's not paying us our bribe? You know, at that point, you didn't have to pay, but he chose to pay anyway. So to say that it was extortion as opposed to bribery, to me, that's a reach. But, you know, the jury bought into that argument and they acquitted him, so that's the end of it.
From what you saw, how pervasive was this corruption in North Providence? Was it limited to the four people convicted in the case, or do you believe the story goes deeper?
No, I believe it goes much deeper. I think this is something that was going on. I first noticed it within my third, fourth year on the council. And there were different players at the time, but some of those players were also wrapped up in the whole FBI investigation that went on in 2009-10. Yeah, I think it was more widespread. I think it was going on for a long time. And I think it's something that's just very difficult to prove unless someone's willing to step forward and do what I did. You know, for the reasons I mentioned, not everybody's willing to do that.
What do you see as the direct consequences for residents from this type of corruption?
It's funny because right after the arrest, a woman in town was interviewed by the Providence Journal. She was quoted as saying, I don't know why this was a big deal. It's not like they were taking money from us, meaning, you know, us, the residents or taxpayers. But yes, they were, because this kind of corruption impacts the willingness or ability of businesses to locate in the town. We probably have had many businesses turned down for zone changes or whatever because they didn't pay a bribe. We probably had other businesses that weren't good for the town but were willing to pay the money and got their zone changes or their liquor licenses or whatever they were looking for. So it absolutely has an impact on business development, economic development, which all has an effect on the tax rate, the tax base of the town, and everybody pays more as a result of it. Plus there's the stigma that's attached to living in a corrupt society, a corrupt town. None of those things bode well. I mean, how many people want to move into a town that stinks of corruption? You tend to have, you know, certain people say, no, I'm not going there. I'm going somewhere else. And those people may be in a position to really help the town down the road, but we'd never know that because we can't attract them.
You now work in Indiana, quite a ways from Rhode Island. Why did you leave?
Quite frankly, I couldn't get a job in Rhode Island. And on more than one occasion, this whole FBI investigation came up in the interview process, and I was asked if I thought it would have an impact on my ability to do the work that I had applied for. So, you know, I just think it's just part of the package. It's something that my wife and I knew going in that life would be very difficult after. We may have to, in fact, move out of state, and I did. My wife, fortunately, still has her job, and she stayed in Rhode Island, but that separation certainly is very hard on us.
Paul Carancy, former North Providence Town Councilman and current Constituent Services Director for Indiana Congressman Todd Rokita. He receives an award today from the National Secretaries of State for Political Bravery for his efforts to uncover corruption on the North Providence Town Council. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh, you're very welcome, Ian.